Trust a few more will wander in. The color is very schwach this year. We are hoping the new president will change our status.
For the good,
of course. He's a graduate. He was my Talmud here in the 90s, but you weren't here yet. You would have known him. He was a nice young man. I will talk tomorrow. Tomorrow is on YU. Today is November 20th, 2016, Sunday afternoon in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. Beautiful weather yet. So all those listening and suffering with the snow and the rain, you should know there's another advantage to living in Yerushalayim. Vic even changed his name back to Vic Snow because he's no longer afraid of what's going to be this winter. We hope. I want to do something special right now. I want to dedicate this year in honor of Moshe Barasut. So you wonder who is Moshe Barasut. We owe him a big vote of thanks. He is a Chabadnik who is the technical genius behind Hebrew books. I don't have to tell you what Hebrew books is about. Over 55,000 Sfarim available for anyone and everyone in the world free of charge. I've used it a number of times. Rare Sfarim, American Rabbanim, and it's all there on Hebrew books. And this young man who's celebrating a big birthday, it's half a century, means he has at least 70 more years of productive achievement, Moshe Barasut. So I want to say thank you to him. I also want to mention, you see, this element in Chabad, and I want you to listen very carefully, Natan, to what I'm saying. This element in Chabad, there's an element in YU that feels very much at home with them. You know, the fences break, we merge, we're a little different, they're a little different, but that which unites us is infinitely greater than that which divides us. If anything divides us at all, it's just two different approaches that are both healthy. And I have a dream. A lot is being written now about the new president, our student, Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman. And my wife showed me an article, I think from the New York Times, where YU, and it's being pulled to the right and being pulled to the left, and which way will Berman go? And I want to tell you, very important that YU attract a lot of Chabadnikim, because there's a limit how many shluchim you can use in the world. I'm not the first one to say this, some Chabadnikim have said it as well. There's thousands and thousands of shluchim, and you need other professions, and YU should be right there to accommodate Chabadnikim who want to be medical doctors and want to be lawyers and want to be accountants and want to be business people and want to go into chemistry and biology and mathematics, whatever they want to go into. And a program that should also have a good basic of Hasidus in it as well. And I understand in YU, I see the Mashpia and the Mashkiach, I see that there is a very heavy Hasidic overtone today. So to me, this is very blessed, and I'm happy that in Yeshiva University, Gris Kolel, we can salute with honor Moshe Barasut and wish him Yomim Shleimim Tovim of health and Bria Taguf and Nakat from children and grandchildren. And we should all be Zaycha B'biyat Golel Mashiach Zidkenu B'mehera Mamish. Okay. Now we can move on. I really feel that gratitude. You all know it, Hebrew books, we've all used it, and he is an individual, no one knows the name, unsung, quiet, but yet what an achievement. Coming back to the shiur we've given, I have to say that the question of Rav Meir Kahana elucidates a lot of debate. People have sent me emails and contacted me, some pro, so con. One individual said, no, it's a terrible thing, you're Sheyurim, you mentioned he was a tzaddik, you sold Olam, etc., etc. I have to tell you, unfortunately, there's no Lashon Hara involved, it's Davi Yadua L'Rabim. This debate, if you're going to censor a Kefet Sheyurim, you have to censor a Moshe's Tshuva, Rav Menashe Klein's Tshuva, the chapter in Dalfin's book, the chapter in Ophir, or you have to censor a good part of what Ophir writes about, all the websites, and this problem, it's a problem, and we're particularly sensitive to it today because of the problems we have in the Torah world. I need not elaborate. A prominent people swore by him, Tzadik Yesod Olam. He just got 18 months in jail and it was a plea bargain. He got off very easy, very cheaply. 18 months in jail, and he has to pay each woman 10,000 shekel. As Malka says, what's 10,000 shekel? I see Rabbi Reuben agrees. I would have fined him 100,000 shekel. That's a little bit more harsh.
How old is this
man? He's our age. He's exactly our age.
Maybe he'll die in prison. Right?
No. Don't curse him like that.
Why
but
not?
Please, Yitzchak, you'll see in a minute we can't curse Jews. So I have to tell you, and I'll also mention to you, you see, Reb Shlomo, so I reached my conclusion that I reached. I stand on it, and Friday night I sang Kalbach Nigunim, I joined, I told you, the shul where I davened, and the people have accepted it. The good outweighs the bad. He had a neshama, if you can say a torn neshama. He struggled, but he remained within, not like his chava, Shlomi, what was the original name? Shech the Shlomi. Not like his other chava, David Dubi Hartman. So, thank God, Klal Yisrael decided what it decided, and I go along with it. So all those that feel I'm being too lenient, I apologize. And all those who feel I'm not being machmir enough, I apologize, but that's my humble opinion. You don't have to accept it, but that's my thought out opinion. With Mayor Kahana, I have to tell you, their yahrzeits fall a few days apart. I think Shlomo was last week, Mayor was Shabbos. When was Shlomo's yahrzeit? Last Thursday, was it? When was it? Tetzayan and
Shlomo.
Yahrzeit. So the yahrzeit is, what is it, 2 days apart? Amazing. So I have to tell you, I wrote the review of Libby Kahana's second volume. You all saw it in Jewish Action. I write about what's in the book. I make clear I don't agree with everything. I'm entitled to my opinion, but I personally owe a debt of gratitude to Meir. He was my madrit in B'nai Akiva, and one time when he was sitting shiva for his father, I remember a whole group of BMT students went to visit him. It had to be in the late 70s. They went to Kiryat Arba. He was sitting shiva there, and Meir said, "Who's your Rebbe?" Oh, they said, "Aaron Rakefet." He said, "Kefet, I made him into a Zionist. I brought him here." The kids came back to me and said, "Absolutely right. I cannot defy." I also have a certain love because I taught his two daughters. I taught his son-in-law. You got to know who I taught his daughter-in-law. I don't have time to tell you who his son-in-law and daughter-in-law are. Just unbelievable. I mean, you might want to know that his daughter-in-law was on the front page of Maariv. If there's a family from down south, a Moroccan family, they had something, I don't remember the exact number, 12, 13 girls in a row. She was one of the girls. And when they had a boy, headlines in Maariv that this family, I think it was Wachman, if I recall correctly, Nietzsche, this family finally had a boy. Front page of Maariv. It was unbelievable. And Nietzsche, coming from this background, you can imagine her parents, I doubt if they went to university. Nietzsche has a PhD, I believe it's in some scientific field from Hebrew University. Now, what an individual. Mark, their son-in-law, Moshe Kaplan, Harav Moshe Kaplan with a long beard today. You should know that I was cursed by his parents. There was when I spoke in Beverly Hills the first time I visited there in the night, it must be 90s, late 80s, I don't remember. And there was a big farewell party after my shurim on this beautiful home in Beverly Hills on the lawn. And the person introducing me to speak says, "Rav Rakefet, you were maledicted in this residence, in this very lawn, and you were blessed here as well." I looked at him, "What are you talking about?" He said, "When you inspired Mark to remain in Israel, his parents were so angry at you. And so many years later, they said, thank God for Rav Rakefet. Look what became of our son." And his parents joined him here in Israel, the Yerei Shemayim, a Talmud Chacham, son-in-law of Meir Kahana. So here too, I have to tell you, a review, three letters came into Jewish Action with such venom and such enmity towards Meir, towards Jewish Action, towards me. How do you write about him? How do you publish it? And he wants to kick out all the Arabs and all the venom. So I wrote a little answer that my review, and I defended Libya. Yeah, you'll see what I wrote. But these are people in the public limelight, and they either attract supporters or those who are detractors.
What did you write the review and the most recent?
The most recent issue that just came out, just reached Israel, you'll see the review in it.
Yeah, I got it.
Including a review of my new book as well as in there. Okay, now, we spoke about, let's go back a moment in time. We spoke about, with Reb Meir, you saw what came in last week about the Kari Bon Olam and the Chatam Sofer, and he wouldn't sing it. Then he was asked why, he didn't want to reveal, and all these charges. So I was also sent from the internet, everything on the internet, a whole machloket, whether Reb Yisrael Nijara, whether it's right, what they say, he did this, he did that, the manuscripts, what appears in the manuscript, what was crossed out of the manuscript, manuscripts about him. So if anyone's interested, there's an entire shakla b'taya there. Then we went into the issue, can you curse, maledict the Jew who is not from? So I have to tell you, I got a beautiful, beautiful letter from the YU Torah, from someone named Baruch Cohen. And he says he was a student of Rav Gristman in Netzach Yisrael after Pesach in 1974, when, if you recall, Henry Kissinger was doing his shuttle diplomacy for disengagement. By the way, Henry Kissinger is responsible for the death of thousands of Jewish boys. He wouldn't let Golda call up the reserves. I mean, this all came out later when they revealed the papers. He was insistent, give the Arabs some sort of victory so they'll feel better, and then they'll make peace. And I don't have to tell you what the results were in the Yom Kippur War. Rav Gustman Zitzal was very upset about Henry Kissinger doing his shuttle diplomacy for disengagement. Rav Gustman was very upset with the pressure he was putting in Israel, and he considered saying Yimach Shmo on Dr. K. But he said he would not do it since Dr. K was Jewish. Rav Gristman was especially distraught knowing that Dr. K's parents suffered through the Churban of World War II. Okay? So, very, very nice comment. He also comments that regarding of Shlomo Karbach, I suggest you read the informative book Holy Beggars, A Journey from Hyde Street to Jerusalem by I.A. Cooper Smith. I.A. spent years with Shlomo, especially in the House of Love and Prayer, so you can see he's pro. I believe I read it, and then there is nice material, but nevertheless, I can't avoid the quagmire of all that has come up. Now,
Well, the implication is he's saying that
Reb Fulmer
didn't do the things that
people. Well, I don't know. I don't want to speak for him, but he's stressing the good, the people Schleimler reached out to, the Nigunim, the people he brought to Yiddishkeit, Am Yisrael Chai, as Yitzchak said, that became an anthem in Russia. Again, I can't do any better. Fuk Chazin Maya Madava. Okay. Yitzchak Stern tells me that in class I mentioned that while the Mishnah Halacha doesn't mention who cursed the Jews and said Yimach Shmo, but I said a thought, maybe it means the Satma, maybe the Square, because those were the two names he mentions time and again in his Tshuvah. You can see he has an affinity with them, also the Lubavitcher, but Lubavitcher certainly is not going to say that. So Yitzchak tells me it was not the Square. And he tells me the Square Dafka would never say Yimach Shmo on a Jew. And whenever he met with the Satmar Rav, the Square Rebbe was very upset with the Satmar Rav. He was very aggravated. And the Satmar Rebbetzin told the husband, why do you aggravate the Square Rebbe? Why do you get him so upset? Please promise me you won't get him upset. So the Rebbe, the Rav of the Square, the Satmar Rav, promised the Rebbetzin Feiga he wouldn't get the Square Rebbe upset. Next time they see each other, once again the Square Rebbe is all upset with him, and the Rebbetzin says, "Why? Why did you not keep your promise? Why are you getting him so upset?" So Satmar Rav said, "I didn't get him upset. I just asked him how he is. He said, Baruch Hashem, Alts is fine, good, everything is good." Everything is good, the Sadler upset. We have the cursed Zionist state. We have all the Apikorsim. And of course, the Square got upset again. So it's a very interesting story. And I removed the Square Rebbe from guesswork. It leaves the Sakma, but I can't be certain because the Mishnah Halakas doesn't say. The other problem we dealt with last week, we're going into real heavyweight contemporary material in a second, but the other problem we dealt with, we'll come back tomorrow, in tomorrow's class, is very unique. I'm going to reveal knowledge, and I hope the world is listening, because everyone is talking about what the Hagmarat Rabbi Haskell Lukstein published, revealed, gave him permission to publish, and the big question mark remains, and I'll fill in exactly what happened. But the whole question of Sifrei Minut, and this leads us in, are you allowed to daven in a house where you have Sfarim? I mean, it would apply to my house too, because in my house I have some Sfarim by Schechter, by Ginsberg, although, but there is a because it's particularly in Schechter's work, it's, you see, with the Torah Shebal Peh, you see the roots there of historical Judaism. So are you allowed to daven? And the Gemara with Acher, when he stood up in the Beis Medrash, the Sifrei Minim fell out of his lap. No, what would you do for the sake of argument? Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, I mean, you see this, who he quotes in Ish Halacha, you see the Talmud Rebbe's Hespet from his son-in-law, Rebbe Yitzchak Tversky, Talmud Rebbe, he says, look what the Rav knew, look what he can quote. Now, these Sfarim were not written by Goyim, by Tzaddikim, by Chassidei Elyon. They were written by, some of them, by Protestant ministers, by philosophers, etc., etc., Heidegger, others. So, I mean, and this raises the basic question of chinuch and ghettoization or a different type of chinuch. Again, I know the way I've educated my children, my grandchildren. But the truth of the matter is, yesh panim lekam, lepanim lekan. And I want to quote Aaron Rakefet, and I say this with all my heart and soul. None of us have yet come up with the system that kol banayach limudei Hashem, that our children don't throw away Yiddishkeit. And that's what hurts, that we can have kids from the finest Haredi background, and they throw away Torah with a passion. We can have kids who went to the finest modern Orthodox yeshiva in America. No one put pressure on them. Everything was explained, betuv tam vidat, and they throw away everything. You have kids who went to Hezda here. You still have the problem in the army. Kids take off their kippah. All right, it's a million times better than it was in the 60s and 70s and 80s. That's for sure. But none of us have yet solved the problem. How can we have a chinuch that we can have 99% success? I don't want to settle for less. I can't say 100, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu achieves 100. But I want 99% success. And, all right, my biggest...
It doesn't work that way.
I know, we don't have the answer, black and white. So we have various approaches, and while I have my own approach, I will never negate or denigrate another approach. If it works, Kanayin Hara with the majority, Zomun Zayin Kisunt. And I, you know, my favorite example, if you know, the Kolel, all right, the Kolel has to put up who your teachers today, right? You have Rabbi Bednar, you have Rabbi Miller, but you're lacking the two greatest styles that taught in Gris Kolel, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and Nechama Leibovitch. And if you got to know Nechama, here was a woman who was a litvashe gedola, the woman's knowledge, her insight, her innovative mind, and the elichkeit, the frumkeit.
She is smart as her brother?
She was smarter than her brother.
I'm sure
she knew enough not to get into trouble. And they were very, very brilliant, a very brilliant family. There was another brother who was a medical doctor, professor at Hadassah, very brilliant family. But here was a woman that had so conquered the world with so much knowledge, and she was not a feminist. Oh, she was down to earth. She was real. And she was a role model. What we had in the Chama, wow. But okay, time marches on. Yiftach Bedoro, Kashmul Bedoro, and today you have to put up with Aaron Rakefet. What can we do? Okay, now I want to move further, and I want to bring it right down to you to here to now. I'm now quoting, and again, the Mishnah Halachot, what he deals with, no one else deals with all these questions. He never turned down a question, whether it came from Satmar or it came from YU. He was ready to answer.
Go back to the Sifrei Minhag. So what about like Sifrei Minhag, like conservative texts or things like that?
Like what?
Like conservative texts, like a conservative Siddur or
something. No, I say conservative Siddur is the list of Sifrei Minhag. What about a text that shows you that it's not God that counts, but man that counts?
Right, I'm saying, what if they quote a Gemara or something? Like, how do you view those?
No, Halavai, they should quote more Gemaras and more Gemaras, but that's not the problem as much.
How do you treat it?
No, you don't throw it in the garbage. I would put a conservative sitter into Seamus. We'll talk about it. But no, the question is much more basic. In YU, we studied up the courses. Plain and simple. You follow? We read Acharam, okay? We read Bialik. People came into YU in the early... I write about it in Revel. They were hysterical. YU has courses in modern Hebrew literature. We had teachers of Sifrut Anglit, the English literature. They cursed. It was unbelievable. We're not in class. We had one professor every class. He cursed Dr. Belkin, like that was his joy in life. You follow academic freedom. And, no one fired him. So that's the Greek mythology, you understand?
Yeah.
Here, you're reading the history of the United States. You're going to read about JFK. You're going to read about the Secret Service who let him know when his wife was coming because he was playing around with women visiting him in the pool. You understand?
Yeah.
Marilyn Monroe included. Now, what kind of education is that? On the other hand, if you don't get that education and you go into the big world, you're suddenly going to be shocked. Hey, what's this all about? And you become the proverbial, I met Beis Yaakov girls. When I first came in Aliyah, I was down in Be'er Sheva visiting my brother, should be well, Dr. Levi Rothkopf. He started out, Dr. Gluck brought him to Israel, Yehuda Gluck's father. Dr. Gluck, Dr. Shimon Gluck, who built the Be'er Sheva hospital. He brought my brother to that job, to Be'er Sheva. Today it's called Soroka. Then it was called the Medical Center of the Negev, I think. So I remember I'm visiting my brother, and they're women neighbors, and it's the summer. It's hot in Be'er Sheva, and they're not wearing clothes even. Here they are in public with hot pants, I think it's called. Believe me, it was a third of their body was covered, if that much. And my brother tells me these are Beis Yaakov girls. You follow? They went into the big world, and they were swept away. How do we come up with the topic? So YU has its approach. It succeeds with many, not with all. But there are other approaches I don't have to elaborate. So that's to answer your question, but I'm not worried about a conservative sitter that they don't have
cover. Right, I'm not worried also.
I would put it into Seamus. I wouldn't. It's not said the Torah should cut off min, in my opinion. Others will tell you it is, but I wouldn't say. Okay, now, I'm quoting from Mishnah Lachat Chelik Yud. I'm quoting Tshuva Ayin Vav. Okay. And it's an unbelievable tshuva to who it's written and what he implies here and what he covers up. He covers his mouth in the tshuva, you'll see. And I'll explain what's happening. Now, this tshuva was written in 1986. It was written to, believe it or not, to Rav Yaakov Ruderman, the Rosh Yeshiva of Baltimore, and the man who ran the yeshiva, Harav Newberg, I believe his name was Herman in English, I think it was Naftali in Hebrew, you can correct me, I know it was Herman, Rabbi Neuberger and Rabbi Ruderman, I believe they were also related by marriage, but the two of them were a perfect pair. They complemented one another. Rav Ruderman was an Eluy, a Slabodka Talmud, and with Neuberger, built Baltimore. If Baltimore today is the city it is, with Ne Yisrael, with a certain type, it's not pure right-wing orthodoxy. It's not Lakewood. They would never allow Rav Ruderman's son-in-law in the Moetze Gedolei HaTorah because he encouraged students to go to college. He had a college degree. They have arrangements with Johns Hopkins. You all know that. So here he's writing to these people, and he says, in relation to our conversation that we spoke about, I want to put more facts down. Now, what are they talking about? And here I have to tell you absolute facts. It's written in Washington. You don't. A book tells the truth. If you don't believe Rakepit's book, then you'll see he published letters there. Because I knew no one would believe me. If you can also get the Moshe Sherry Memorial Vol. Nakudat Yisrael put out, you'll see as well. Story is as follows. The world really did not know what was going on in Russia. When I say the world, I mean our world. We knew that there were refusnikim. We didn't know the depth of it. We knew there were chabadnikim in Russia. A little bit we knew, but the depth of it we did not know. When the Mossad, when the TIR, the branch of the Mossad that dealt with Russia, sent myself and my wife to Russia in 1981, January, after preparing us for half a year, it was a shocking revelation. And they picked the right man. In other words, if you read the Mossad book, you'll see what I'm saying. And I'm not praising myself, Chas v'Chalila, but I'm stating facts. Malka and I were overwhelmed. We were in the prime of life. And we went crazy what we can do to help our brethren behind the Iron Curtain. As you know, for 9, 10 years, we lived, 10 years, we lived a dual existence, a regular daily existence. And as some people here spend their nights watching football, but other people, we lived a total different experience at night, working and doing. Okay. I wanted to get a family out. Malka and I zeroed in on one family. Again, there were hundreds of families we met, but one family had been in refusal for the first time we met them for 9, 10 years. They had 3 children. And I was told that Moshe Shera, Rabbi Moshe Shera, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, has a lot of political influence. So I made an appointment and I went to see him in New York. It happened, my daughter accompanied me. I had a near witness, an eyewitness. My eldest daughter just graduated Michlala. And I said, come with me, you'll visit your grandparents. I think they paid for her trip. And we're going to go to America this summer. Malka gave me permission, and I worked very hard to do for the SS family from Moscow. Okay. So one of the people I made this appointment was Moshe Shera. Without going into many details, when I came into Moshe Shera, he told me he had checked me out, and right away he said to me, he said to me, we know that you're a tzaddik and you're a lamdin and you're also the last Mizrachiite alive. So I told him, Reb Moshe, in your office, I'm the last Mizrachiite alive. You're correct. I happen to know your brother Harry Shera. At that moment, his whole attitude changed and we became best friends. Why did his attitude change? You'll read Washington, you'll understand. His brother was my principal in the 40s in Salanta, a Teira Vadas boy. I think he's still alive. The Ribbono Shel Olam, like the Gemara says, Tzaddikim are punished in this world, rewarded in the next world. Rishayim are punished in this world, so they live to be 120, and then they go to a good Gehenna. His brother was Masada Kedushin for Goy and Jew, no conversion needed. The biggest reform rabbi in the world. It's hard to believe. Torah v'Das boy goes to Jewish Institute of Religion, etc., etc. All right. When I showed Reb Moshe the pictures that I took in Russia, some of which you see in Washington, some of which you've seen in the Mossad book, B'netiv HaMama, he looks at the pictures. I believe I write this in Washington. He says, this can't be. This is, what are you telling me? This is Kiyat Moshe. I say, Reb Moshe, what do you mean Kiyat Moshe? Look at the furniture. This is Russia. And I have to say, no one became more inspired, just as Rabbi Rubin became inspired when I went after him, for him and Judy to go to Russia, Reb Moshe became inspired. And he went about doing what he can, Larry, to help Russian Jewry believe the Nefesh. He started sending shlichim. I'm told the book came out. I'll look at the book and I'll comment when I look at it, because I want to see if he gives credit to Rakefit and Grona, or it's the typical art scroll idea of rewriting history. And they went to work. Now, they went to work. Look, Torah Jews are good people. You can be black, you can be white, you can wear a kippah srugah, you can wear a black kippah, you can wear a shtreimel, but Torah Jews are good people. And people really wanted to help the Russian Jews, the Sivrivnikim, and I can give you many, many examples. There's someone from London, today in Netanya, Ernie Hirsch, Linda and Ernie. He went the first time, I believe it was 1980. A book came out about his activities. It's called Refused. And he gave his whole life. He lost his business. He practically went bankrupt. His whole life was devoted to helping Russian Jewry. So now a handful started to come out, and some of them wandered to Baltimore. And I can tell you, one of the big stars who ran the Serivnikin religious community in Leningrad, Chaim Wasserman, should live and be well, they offered him a fortune to come to Baltimore. And I have to give him credit. He went to Haifa, remained in Haifa. He's been in Haifa for 30 years now, working for Shvat Ami. You'll ask him Shvat Ami, the name Rabbi Chaim Wasserman. What a towering personality. He turned them down. But now, fine, they're coming to Baltimore, and you have a very simple question. And this is a question that haunts us. Are they Jewish? If they're Jewish, are they Mamzerim? Or are they not Mamzerim? And here, let's look at life in America. Let's look at life in the Russian Empire, which we saw up close. By the way, I want to make clear, and I've said this many times, I say it in public, I am not talking about the Chabadnikim in Russia. From time immemorial, there were from Jews, Chabadnikim, who were Moisen Nefesh, who were executed, who were sent to Siberia. The Rebbe's own father, the seventh Rebbe's father, died in exile. I'm not talking about Chabad. But something else happened, that in Jews who were already a third and fourth generation without Torah, without Rebbeim, without rabbis, without shuls, without chinuch, they're in refusal. And I told you, when a Jew is in refusal, he has to ask, why am I suffering? And when the Jew starts asking, you don't know the Rav's Torah that I've repeated a million and one times, Manish Tana Alayla Hazah, why does the Seder have to begin with questions? You can tell the kid, Avadim, Ayuna, Lefaro, what do we need those questions for? To drive the kids crazy? All right, I'm Zalka today, I have great grandchildren asking the questions. Then we all ask, the Bundagon says we all have to ask. But the Rav says, we want to teach a Jew to ask questions. When you ask questions, you will reach truth. People who don't ask questions, some of them will never reach truth. So Jews started, why are we suffering? Was leiden wir, I say. Why are we suffering so much? And they start coming to Yiddishkeit in refusal. So we're reaching out to them. Now, let's talk about life. Akavet v'akineh v'tai v'motzinat adam min olam. So Rakefet says, I've said this again many times, I apologize that I'm repeating myself, but these are the three greatest problems we have. It doesn't mean we have them all together. When we're young, it's in reverse order. When we're young, taiva, sexual drive. I need not tell you what goes on in the world today. Middle age, kinna, we're jealous. I make $100,000 a year, and that schlub, that bulvan, that dummy, that jerk, he's making $1 million a year. I have a home that you walk in, you don't need a map to get around. He has a home, and you walk in, you need a map to tell you which room is where, what, when, where. When you get older, you reach already zikna. Oh boy, over covered, I saw rabbanim with long beards spit at each other, fight with each other, maledict each other, despite what Reb Menashe Klein Paskin, curse each other. Follow me, Yitzchak. Over covered. I don't have to give examples. I can, all right? Now, taiva, so you have taiva. Without taiva, I gave lectures on sex, spent the whole year on sex, marriage, etc. Very important. Without taiva, none of us would be sitting here. It's an open medrash rabba. Who the heck wants to get married, support an alien woman? Yomo knows every morning, I tell him what time I'm leaving Grus. I have to meet Malka, I have to do this, I have to do that. Yomo would be much happier. The Rebbe should have never married, doesn't have to worry, he can spend time in Grus, doesn't have to look at the clock, etc. Yeah, don't ask personal questions, Chaim Herbie, relax. So we're trying. He's not Herbie. He's not smart. Don't overstate the case. But he has a background. He has baggage. You have baggage of one sort. He has baggage of another. So Taiva. So what do you do in our circles today? What's the big deal, Taiva? Clinton, President of the United States, JFK, President of the United States, every college kid. I told you, and I pity the American Rabbanim, a girl comes to you, a Balat Shuva, and she wants to get married to a Kohen. No, Ribbono Shel Olam. If you start asking her questions, sure, she was in college, she slept with this one, that one, Jew guy. No, a nice Jewish girl who knows nothing. Sleeps with a guy. One time, she has a chalosh shem zona, which doesn't mean a prostitute. Everyone is doing it there. They're not prostitutes. That's the lifestyle. And she, in Russia, you couldn't sleep around like that. Why? In order to sleep around like that, you need a motel. You need a place to go to. You need understanding parents. We had here a fabulous secretary. One of the terrible things that happened in YU was they fired all the secretaries here years ago. They were fabulous. Lorraine's fabulous.
Why did they fire all the secretaries?
Cutting back money. You have no idea what went on here, what we've been through. But relax now. New president, new era. So Lorraine was married to a direct descendant of the Vilna Gaon's family. She was English, very, the most, you'll ask anyone, they still say until today, if we can only find another Lorraine. She went out, established a business, very successful. She was multi, she could do multitask, fabulous lady. But they weren't from, were not from, maybe their home was kosher. So she told me her teenage daughter brings home boys to in the same bedroom. Her husband got hysterical. So I told her, look, if you don't raise kids with religious values, how can you tell a kid? She says to you, I'm old enough to order steak, I'm old enough to eat this, I'm old enough to have sex. What's the difference? They view sex. It's a biological outlet or action. No different than eating steak and potatoes or fish and chips, etc. So in order to live a life like that, you have to have where? I don't want to go any further. You all understand what I'm saying. Lona Imli to even talk about it. In Russia, they couldn't. There's no room. Family shared apartments. I don't need Jomo to tell me this. I saw it with my own eyes. A kitchen, and here with one family, another family, two families, could be three families in one apartment. Sometimes a Jew, a guy. It was unbelievable. Family shared. Sometimes you were better. A frum family was better off with a guy because a guy had more respect than a Jew. I mean, I can tell you I was once grabbed by important refuseniks. How can I be so stupid to believe in primitivism, that there's a God and that there's a religion, that there's a revelation? They just left good communist ideology, totally brainwashed on that level. So what do you do? A boy and girl want to get together. So they got married. When she got married, the glorious communist empire has to give you a bedroom. A bedroom they give you? Okay. No, now they're living together, like the kids on college campus. A year or two later, they're tired. They walk away. They go to the commissar. Get a divorce. Another half year, she shacks up with this one, he shacks up with this one. And the same story repeats itself. And I met refusnik and were from, including a name I just mentioned before they were from. They had one wife, a second wife, a third wife. I think with the name I mentioned, I have to give cover. All his ex-wives and the wife he remained with became from. Everyone. It's an amazing story. Everyone became from. But they were kids, no different than American kids. So you know what the word they use. I didn't want to use this language. Okay. Very good. Do you see the halachic problem here? Ribbono Shel Olam, a boy and girl get together. They're Jewish. Ein adam oseh bilato bilat snut. Chazakar in chazal. No one treats their sexual relations as something halatry, snut, prostitution. Treat it seriously. No. She's married to the first guy. She never got a get. She shacked up again with a Jewish guy. You see, we're better off when it's all Goyim, but no, they're both Jewish. she never got a get. She shacks up with a third guy. She finally became frum, marries, chuppah v'kedushin. Has children. Children can be mamzerim. They were married once, they were married twice, they were married thrice. Follow the problem? That's only part of the problem.
Marriage could be a reborn marriage.
When they finally got married in Russia and Balei Tshuva, they got married in Orthodox, a regular marriage, Kedat v'Kedin. No one had reform rabbis there. All right, what you're saying, Herbie, is this is the famous question of civil marriage, machloiket that shook the world between Reb Moshe Feinstein, Reb Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, and you might want to know that Noriya Rebbe Reb Soloveitchik, these ears and this mouth discussed the topic with him for many hours in the late 70s. He agreed with Reb Henkin, not with Reb Moshe. Unbelievable. Well, this is a problem. I'm not saying it's insoluble, but this is a problem. But then there are more problems. You see, how do you know who your father is? How do you know who your father is? Chazal already raised the... Everyone knows who their mother is. How do they know who your mother is? A baby has to be taken out of a womb, out of a rechem. So their doctors, their nurses, people know who the mother is. How do you know who your father is? Here.
DNA.
Well, today you have DNA. That's a recent development. But for the sake of argument... someone inherits $1 million from his father. You go and you have a lawsuit. You're challenging him. How do you know who the father is? You want $1 million. Go prove it's your father. So Chazal say, how do we have inheritance? How do we know who the father is? Rov bi'ilot acharei habal. All right? This is the axiomatic concepts in Chazal. Rov bi'ilot, a married person, the majority of her sexual life is with her husband. And therefore, if that's the husband and that's the man she's living with, we can assume halacha l'maisa with all that implies that this is the father. Okay? Good, this is the father, but look at the questions that are being raised here, one after another. Endless Jews, no Torah education, total hefkeret in sexual behavior, and as he says, look at the children. There was no observance. Isanita kedushin kiyotzibo b'sha'at nefesh, and no observance whatsoever. Didn't even enter into their mentality. It's like the New York Times. The people for decades, the New York Times, b'sha'at nefesh, total zilzel in any observance whatsoever. The Rav used to say, when you looked at the New York Times in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, and the Rav was a big fan of the New York Times. He felt Reb Moshe Feinstein was a big fan of the New York Times, and told Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. They felt that it Americanizes you. You know what's going on. You learn English, the New York Times. And the Rav would say, when the Jewish issue came up, they never quoted an Orthodox rabbi. Didn't exist. What? Old-fashioned, outmodish, outlandish, primitive. Go back to Europe, go back to the ghetto. They quoted reform, conservative. And the Rav gave credit to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He said, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you saw, it's no secret. I quoted many times. It's in the Rav's interview with Marav in the mid-70s, where he says Lubavitch put Torah in the mainstream of life. That the New York Times suddenly woke up. There was a Rabbi Shem Tov. There's a Rabbi Shem Tov. Washington, D.C. knows all the senators, all the congressmen. Suddenly, the Rebbe. Today, the New York Times is choking. Ivanka is a Shomeret Shabbat. You understand? The New York Times is choking. She gave an interview. I have it here. We couldn't do better about the beauty of Shabbat, what Shabbat is about. I hold Jared is probably frumer than he would have been because he married Ivanka when all is said and done. It's an amazing thing. So he says here, b'sheit nefesh, how do we know who these people are? How do we know if they're Jewish? The lady might have slept with the 101 Gentiles, right or wrong, in Russia. What's the difference? We're all Soviet citizens. There's no concept of nationalism. It has to be totally eradicated. You all know Stalin went crazy when 50,000 Jews turned out to see Golda Meir at the great synagogue on Rosh Hashanah. You all know what happened. Read any history of the Jews in Russia. That's when Stalin decided, after so many years of communist indoctrination, and they still retain a Jewish feeling, we have to send them to Siberia. He had concentration camps ready. Thank God he died before the doctor's plot. You all know all the Jews. When Stalin took ill, his life could have been prolonged, but there was no good doctor. All the Jews were in jail, and all the non-Jewish doctors were dead drunk. It was a Sunday, I believe. Vodka. And no, these are facts. These are facts. So he evidently, what you put together from the first paragraph of this Chavana, and you see the year 1986, this is when it's really being comprehended in the Orthodox world. And I was involved. I mean, I started it with Rabbi Scherer, but I'll come to it, not to maybe today, maybe next week, of my involvement when the Mossad made me the liaison between them and between the Bnei Brak world. That's mamish at this period, 86, 87. So evidently, Rabbi Nasha Klein and Rabbi Ruderman, who were Lamdanim Mufakim, and Rabbi Neuberger, who was a very practical person, he built the city that surrounds Nei Yisrael. It's an actual little city, if you know what I'm talking about. Houses, not just dormitory, faculty homes. It's a little city. It's a dream what he has in Baltimore. With all the difficulty, Baltimore's not an easy city today. I don't know if you know the statistics, but I believe it was, as far as crime, it was the worst city in the United States this past year, with rioting and criminals and robberies. And my grandson married a girl who was raised in Baltimore, and they were just back with my great-grandson, and family brought them back for Sukkot. And he says, robberies on top of robberies. People are afraid to go out, to go to shul. And these are beautiful neighborhoods. And this is Baltimore today. But with it, Nei Yisrael is not just an island unto itself, but it's an island that sustains Yiddishkeit in all of Baltimore. So they were evidently talking about these problems. How do you know the kid is not a mamsa? How do you know the kid is Jewish? How do you know who the father was? The mother we know more. All these questions of halachic family purity status. Tarat Mishpacha when it comes to pedigree. And here there's an unbelievable line. He writes to them, I quote, yes, you're right, what we spoke about. The Indian Yuchasin, Yomo, I can't take any talking. The Indian Yuchasin, so a lot we have to talk about, a lot of doubts. You know what that means? I don't want to express with my mouth what I think in my heart. Better to be quiet. What does this mean? All right, go back to the third volume of Rakafot Aharon, available from Yomo, contribution to Shvutami, the volume that just came out. Go into what I write there with Mamzeret. One of my Talmidim from the Monday class, who's a world famous professor in his field, said to me, I took your book to read on the run, but I saw the new volume, I have to sit and concentrate. That is correct. The new volume, you cannot read. It's not Revel or Silver or even the Rav for that matter. It cannot be read on the run. It's not Washington. You have to read it sitting, concentrating. Oh, you'll see with Mamzeret. With Mamzeret, we have a halacha Kivin de Nitma a Nitma. It's the fourth parak of Kedushin. I give you all the sources in the Shirim I gave in the Kollel that are recorded in Rakafat Aaron due to my dear student, Rabbi Dr. Yaakov Weinstein, should live and be well. So you see, even Mashiach Tzidkenu is not going to reveal who are the Mamzerim among us. Kivin de Nitma'a, if I'm pronouncing it right, Ayin Hey, I need a Yemenite here to pronounce it right. Kivin de Nitma'a, Nitma'a. And what it means is, once a Jew gets lost among all the Jews, we accept him. We don't look further. And this is why with Mamzeret, there's an absolute machloket. If you don't have two Edim, Kashira Edim, who know for sure, you certainly aren't allowed to say anything. If you have two Edim who know, even there it's a machloket. Should you testify? Shouldn't you testify? You see a machloket achronim. And there was a case, I don't want to mention the name, but I remember it well. I know the family, a Torah Vadas graduate. And akavet vakineva ta'ava, underlined ta'ava, a kid in his late teens, early 20s. And they had an affair. And she was pregnant. And Rosh Hashiva advised them, leave the city, go upstate, come back a year or two later, teach in a Talmud Torah. No one has to know that she's giving birth 6 months after the marriage. I mean, you keep these things quiet. Allah kama v'kama with mamzerut, we're not supposed to talk about it. Kivin d'nitma nitma. You'll see the Gemara. That's why I have a lot of trouble with the websites. There was a psak of Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, Rav Shalom Kamenetsky. Now, I know Rav Shmuel going back to my rabbinate in Philadelphia, 61, 62. They were just getting started with the Philadelphia Yeshiva, Rabbi Yitzvei, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. I knew Rabbi Yitzvei's wife. She was the daughter of Rav Avram Kalmanovich, the Mira president, Rosh Yeshiva. I mean, Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky is a frum guy, as far as I know, as he raised the generation, Do Yisham Yevurach. And they were matir, a woman without a get, the whole story in Baltimore. Well, yeah, Baltimore, Washington, Rav Greenwald was involved. I'm told he's a big Talmud Chacham, Yerei Shemayim. And there's one website that devotes all his time to ripping them apart and yelling and shouting that this marriage, she remarried, the kids are mamzerim, etc., etc. Alpi halacha, you shouldn't do that. I know that there have been big machlakot, but once a psak is given, kivin the nitma, forget about it, don't argue, don't fight, don't publicize. And this is what Reb Menashe Klein is saying it very beautifully. He says, I don't want to reveal with my mouth what my heart thinks. And he's correct. These are tremendous questions. I've lived with these questions. I've seen these questions. I've been involved with endless Russian families. And thank God we have Reb Moshe that we can solve the problem of civil marriage. And by the way, civil marriage is not just in the state of Russia. In America too, how many kids you have became Balei Tshuva, what Herbie Maltz mentioned, that their parents were married by a Reform rabbi, by a conservative rabbi. She was married previously when she still was in her parents' home, and they had an Orthodox rabbi. And you have so many problems of this nature, and people get married civilly, and what's the Reform status, a conservative marriage, a Reconstructionist marriage, and they have no get afterwards. Plenty, plenty of problems. Right in Rehov Neely, the second home of BMT, I told you this over the decades, there was a kid, I remember him well, he lives in Israel, I meet him occasionally on Shabbat and Yantif. He's evidently had a bit of a difficult life, as I see, he's in his old age, finally worked out a marriage, and kid comes to me, Rebbe, they told me to talk with you, I'm worried stiff, I'm a mamza. So I tell the kid, first of all, don't talk, don't say a word, sit down, I threw everyone out of the room, we'll talk privately. And the kid tells me he's from his mother's second marriage. His mother isn't at all from, father isn't from, they're from Jamaica, and Queens, Jamaica, the original Jamaica where no Jews live today. And he says, I'm worried, Stiff, she never got a get, and I'm a mamza. I said, who is your rabbi? So he tells me the name, and it works out. It's a good friend of mine. I'll mention the name, Rabbi Eliyahu Marcus, Seichet Tzadik Lebracha, the Meshbetz Rebbe's son-in-law, Eli Marcus. I said, Eli Marcus was your rabbi? All right, let me call him. So I call Eli. He was in America at the time, or maybe he was here already. No, I don't think he was here, then he went back. This may be when he was here. I say, Eli, I give him the name. Yeah, sure, they were my congregants. Tell him the problem. He starts laughing. He says, of course his mother didn't have a get. She was married to a guy the first time around. But she never wanted to tell the kid because she was ashamed. He became frum. And to tell him she was married to a guy. But I told him, you absolutely are not a mamza whatsoever. Had a shiloh once in the kollel with the nicest looking, handsomest Talmud I ever taught. He and his wife, and I think two children, the third one, he was here. Fabulous individual. He's in outreach today. Talmud Chacham, Yerei Shemayim. Oh, what a... So he comes to me in my office crying, worried, Stiff. He has to reconvert. There was a whole story. His great-grandmother converted in Winnipeg, Canada. No, the great-grandparents were not from. Worried, Stiff, what type of conversion was it? In the early 1920s, Winnipeg, Canada. And he said, so what's the big problem? Rabbi Eshel Shech, they gave an interview to Mishpacha, and he mentioned in Mishpacha that every year we convert a number of people in the Kollel, Mitzat Safek. So you go to mikveh with a beis din and you don't make a bracha, what's the big deal? Right or wrong? A woman, I had the Shaila Halacha L'maisa, I spoke with her, I was a youngster then, so I always consulted the Baron Lichtenstein, a girl in Machan Gold. So Rabbi Baron liked my psak. I said, if you like it, then I go with it. I told you, you go to mikveh before you get married with a beis din and go through a whole conversion, but you don't make a bracha. All right, that solved the problem. By the way, I later taught her son in this very college. You follow me? What children she raised. Okay. He's a medical doctor today. And I don't know if he still has his payas on. Abi, I'll deal with you in 1 second. I just want to finish up. So these problems are endless. You can't escape them. So he tells me, I say, why can't you convert? He says, Rebbe, my father's a Kohen. If he converts, me manavshach, where what happens with the kahuna? So you should know, I went to the computer, I typed in Winnipeg. First of all, I checked the conservative rabbinic list of that era. No conservative rabbi was anywhere near Winnipeg. Then I went to the computer and I typed in Winnipeg rabbis 1920s. And I get a master thesis done at, I think, is there Toronto University or York University? What's it? So I get a master thesis done there on Hasidic Rebbeim in Canada before World War II. And lo and behold, in Winnipeg, there's a Hasidic Yid from Tzfat, a Rebbe, who came right after World War I, and he was the Rav of Winnipeg. He did the concert, he did the conversions, but that wasn't enough for me. I wanted to be certain. So my daughter had just been involved in handled the divorce here, and the man was of Winnipeg origins, and he's a Talmud Chacham. And he went back to Chicago. He's Talmud of Rabban Soloveitchik, but we know each other. So I called him and I said, look, I have this question. Can you find out? Can I be certain that this Rebbe did the conversion? He said, look, I left Winnipeg, I was a little kid, but I know two people still alive in Hollywood, Florida, their old age, in their 90s, from Winnipeg. He gives me the phone number. I take a look. The phone number is very similar to my dear student, David Goldison. I call David. I say, do you know? I give him the names. He says, Rebbe, I daven with them every morning at the 6:30 minyan. So I told him, my question, calls me back the next day. They said absolutely the only one who did conversion was that Rebbe. He was in Winnipeg till the early 70s when he went back to Tzfat to die. He died a few years later, buried in Tzfat. Chassidic Rebbe, he was the only one. So you can be samech that this was a proper conversion. They probably weren't totally observant afterwards, but the basic Yiddishkeit was there, and certainly the conversion is good. He checked with his grandmother. She was still alive, and she dimly remembered her mother telling her it was a Hasidic Rebbe who converted her. And I told him, you're a Kohen, you have nothing to worry about. So you see, we have these problems not only with Russian Jewry, but we have these problems right here in this very classroom. This is the world in which we live. And that's why one has to be a Talmud Chacham, one has to be this. This is not something that the average yeshiva boy knows. Remember, I deal with, in the Mamzeret issue, I deal with the story of Panovich, with the two survivors. Remember the story, the man wound up in Brooklyn, the wife wound up in Bnei Brak. She got a heter to remarry. He finally made a little money, and he visits Israel. It had to be the late 50s. And walking the streets, then Yerushalayim was nothing, with nothing, was a border city. But Bnei Brak was the home of Panovich, Vishnitz, Slabatka. He went to Bnei Brak, got off the plane, and on the street he meets his first wife. He had remarried, she had remarried. She had two children in Panovich Yeshiva Latzirim. And I write how Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank solved the problem with the Ger Al Yedi Shliach, Bitul Haget, the whole Sugyan Gittin, Daf Lamed Gimel, Lamed Bet. You'll see the Sugya there. You'll see Rakefet's book, the third volume, Rakefet Aaron. You'll see the letter I got about Rabbi, the living testimony that so many Dayanim have asked me for. So now the letter is published. It's in the book. But Rav Tzvi Pesach refused to publish. So they asked him, why don't you publish what you did? It's fabulous. You saved lives. So finish the Kinder vom Gassel reden for me. I don't want the children on the street. These are the average guy in Hebron, in Panovich, in Reitz Kollel, in Grus. He doesn't know this. You have to be a London Murfag. You have to be a Posek. You have to be totally involved with Torah Shebaal Peh. What's it all about? And we have these problems. These problems will not go away. So to be chayshish, we have to be chayshish. But Baruch Hashem, halachically, we can solve these problems. We have to accept the Russian Jews. We accept the American Jews. We do what we can so they can rejoin the corpus body of Am Yisrael Chai. Yes, Avi.
I was wondering, what did Rabbi Menashe Klein think of the land of his?
I don't know. I can't answer that. He doesn't discuss it, so I can't answer. But the Lange case is a real problem, because right after the Lange case, Reb Moshe came out with a new volume of Eben Ezra, and he was Matim Mamzeret there that was a lot more difficult lahatir than the Lange case. So the Lange case, as I alluded to when I spoke in public, politics got involved with halacha, and that is very sad, plain and simple. And I'm not the only one who feels this way. I asked the Baron Lichtenstein. I called the Baron, you'll see. So the Baron told me the Rebbe agreed with Rav Goren. So I asked the Baron, why doesn't the Rebbe go public? He said, to be involved in the Israeli politics and machleket, it's not for the Rebbe at that stage in life. You follow?
In other words, if it would have been a rabbi, Bnei Brak who gave that heter,
You're quoting a footnote of mine where I was zeichet lechaben to Reb Moshe's words, if Mordechai Tendler is telling the truth. And I believe Mordechai is. No one could make up. And the source is all in Chelek Gimel, in the footnote.
We're
yes, Larry.
Attacked for these things by some people too.
Relax, of course. Larry, yeah.
Politics on both sides?
Well, let's put it this way. Moshe Dayan, I remember my introduction to Israeli politics, Rabbi Moshe Dayan said at the government, if the rabbis cannot find a heter, a way out, I will introduce civil marriage. And he was God at that time. It's before the 73, the Yom Kippur War. But I think because he spoke like that, it got others very frightened that Gorman's Heter is pure politics, not halacha. But there was a lot to, you had to give Rabbi Gorman a lot of credit, because halachically he is very solid. What he came up with, the Mesich Lefi Tumam, the Polish guy in the social work reports, that was very, very powerful. There were many sfeikot. If you're familiar with this country, I said right away, three of his 4 points are golden. 1 point there with Chazaka, Jew, that was shvach. Rabbi Aaron told me exactly what the Rav said. Baruch Shekibanti Ladas Gedolim. But the Rav didn't want to get involved with political issues, relationships with Rabbi Gorin, with others. But Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin, there was a recording where Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin, who was blind, there's no shochad here, right? They were talking about the Posek of America before Rabbi Moshe Gaon and Tzaddik, who I yet had the schut to talk with and learning. Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin said, "Chvashteinish, what's the lunzay from them? Is that good? It's a good chetah." Okay, and I was there at the Hespedim for Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin at the Shleishim in Geula, and his grandson, Rabbi Yehuda Herzl, was speaking, and he quoted the grandfather, and I saw some of the Kanoim wanted to get up and slap him and push him off, and they asked the Shiloh, or Rashi Yeshiva sitting there from that world, and they told him not to do anything. That Rabbi Henkin said it, you have a right to quote it. So Rav Gorin, I spoke with Rabbi Leisa Shapiro, he was Rabbi Avraham's nephew. Gon Adiyav, Beit in Yerushalayim, he lived up the block for me, and he had a love for YU. You know, he felt what we did in YU, that we were able to raise. He doesn't realize that for every Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein that came out of YU, there were many others that didn't succeed like that. But he had a love. Rabbi Lamb brought him to YU. That begins Rabbi Lamb's Kamsav, who brings some for Israel for a year or two. And that's when he brings Meir Goldwich, who stays. You follow? And Rip Meir is Rip Meir. He straddles the fence. America here. These are unbelievable individuals. Not like a guy named Rakefet who sits in a little office and a little classroom. And Baruch Hashem, he turns down all office to do this, do that, and just wants to learn and be machadish and praise the God to give him strength to teach everything he wants to get out of his system. You have no idea how much more I have, but we're just scratching the surface. Baruch HaTodon HaMelech HaLam
Shekol Niyamit Barol. So we see from Menashe Klein, a great God, even a rightist, but with a heart.
No, poskim have to have a heart. That I show in Rakafet Aron, that when it comes to classic agunah and mamzei rud, there's a chiyuv to try to do your best to see within the halakhic framework that you can be mekil. That's the Medrash Rabbah. The ma'at ashukim. Why does a kid have to suffer? Because his parents sin. Okay? Agunah, of course, it depends. If the lady is in her 90s, it's not such a mitzvah lahatirotah. You don't have to kill yourself. But a lady in her 20s, 30s, kolamata agunah achat kilu bana achat mei churvat Yerushalayim. Or shrunat Yerushalayim. That's an unbelievable thought. Okay. Then, Rabbi Menashe Klein says something else, and I'm so happy to have found this, because I've said it so many times, and you start to wonder, maybe you're off the wall. And here I can say, Baruch Shekivanti Ladas Gedolim. We use the word Baal Tshuva. We use that word freely. Baal Tshuva has absolutely no relevancy to 99% of the people we talk about as Baal Tshuva. Now what we mean is very simple. Balei Tshuva. Yitz and I can be Balei Tshuva. We've been frum. Yitz was born into a frum home, and he went to Maimonides. My home was not that frum. You have to understand that my home was frum and wasn't frum. It was a relic of the 1930s. My mother was the only one out of six children who kept kosher. So it tells you something. My father's mother was at Sadekit. I'm told she died out of heartache, what became with her daughter in America. And I have a picture of her sitting with me in the year she died. There's a picture in the 1939. There's a picture in my office sitting with me on Washington Avenue a year before she died. So I never really knew her. But the mumma of the family And we'll talk about the Mummer next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, what the word means, what has to deal with Russian Jewry, you know, it's the tshuva here. So the Mummer of our family used to say she didn't eat anywhere, but by her niece, Esther Leah, my grandmother, by Ir Ken Menesen. So it's not that I didn't come from an Israel, but there was no concept of halacha, no concept of Shabbos. Everyone worked on Shabbos. It's so sad. But, all right, I've been frum all my life. I've been frum. I had this schut in seventh grade already. I met the Shanghai survivors. So you can imagine my Rebbeim didn't speak a word of English. I didn't speak a word of Yiddish, and the rest is history. So if we do something wrong, we can be balei tshuva. Vixno. Vixno comes from a Yuchesed family. His uncle was Rosh Hashiva in Chaim Berlin. All right, if he does something wrong, he can be a Baal Tshuva. Larry can be a Baal Tshuva. I met his parents, his father. All right. But we use the word Baal Tshuva on Russian Jews, American kids. They're returning to their roots. The halachic terminology for them is tinokot shenishba'u. You follow?
Doesn't tshuva mean returning?
What?
Doesn't tshuva mean returning?
You're returning to Yiddishkeit. Bal tshuva. Shlachlon ani katana v'chalonu. You follow? The whole davening in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's geared for people like us. These are people. Tinok shenishba. They're total goyim. Where were they raised? What were their values? I would use the term. No, it's less than reform. I would use the term, they're returning to their roots. That's the term. Excuse me?
Chazrim
b'tshuva is also not good to be. We're not going to change the world. Everyone's going to call them balei tshuva. And I would use the word returning to their roots. Chozrim l'shrashim shel yahadut. Maza leyot yehudi. That's what it's all about. Uri Zohar, when he became a Baal Tshuva, and Uri Zohar is one of the great examples of our generation. I mean, I lived it. I saw it. I still shiver and shake. I've told you the story. Baruch Hashem. Should live and be well. At Meir V'Yesrim. I told you the story, right? With the Zuberman family. I told it in class or I told it elsewhere. Tell me quickly. I don't want to repeat myself. Told it in class. So you know the story. So Uri Zohar got up and speaking in public, he said, I was educated here in Israel, the Mamlachti system, Zionism, and the heart of what it means to be a Jew. No one ever taught me. And you see, you can't call him a Baal Tshuva. He discovered Chozrim l'sharashim, his roots, who he is, what he is.
Did he have any impact on the secular types?
Well, I'll tell you, he did give birth to the Chazar v'Tshuva movement, picked up tremendously, and he certainly had impact. But he became Haredi. Haredi or semi-Haredi. So right away when you become Haredi, they sort of it moves you out of the mainstream. Today it's a little bit better. The Haredim are back to a certain degree in the mainstream. The most popular sabbath of Shalit Yisrael is the Agudat Yisrael, the Gera Chassid, the American from Borough Park, Litzman. You follow? Every survey shows he's the most popular sar today. So it's a little bit, the world is different today. But in the 70s and the 80s, people were very upset in our world that, oh, why did the Zohar move into a corner, his tater bepina, if it didn't do better. And I always said, look, Balei Tshuva have to have outer symbols. They can't understand people like myself or those like me who are dressed like everyone else and look like everyone else and act with everyone else. And nevertheless, we are filled with Torah and Yirat Shemayim, not 99%, but 100%. You follow? It's hard for them. But he had to do what he had to do. There was a whole genre of people like Uri Zohar. Pupik, Arnon, he was an artist. He became a Baal Tshuva. I met him. To look at these, they look like they step out of Meir Sharim. And these were part and parcel of the Israeli scene. And Einstein, Herbie mentioned two of Uri Zohar's teenage children married a boy, Einstein's two children, a boy, a girl. I mentioned it. And Einstein couldn't make his peace with it. My friend Chazar B'Tshuva, Kilu, he died. His wife became a tzaddeket, Yesod Olam. And his ex-wife, they got divorced. She's no longer alive, but you know the story. I told the story maybe last year, 2 years ago. It was headline news in every Israeli paper in the 1980s. When she left Riga to come in Aliyah, the late 30s, they got out before Hitler. So Chabad Chassid, Riga was a Chabad town. You know that. The Rebbe was there, the sixth Rebbe. So this Chassid said to her, Gedenkst dir seit a Yiddishe Mädel. Remember, you're a Jewish daughter, okay? And she came and was raised here, and of course, no Yiddishkeit, and marries Arik Einstein. And by the way, he was lulled. One thing about Uri Zohar and Arik Einstein, even when they were not playboys. They were loyal to them. That's a compliment, because I don't have to tell you, and in the world beyond us, there's no concept of loyalty. Even our prime minister, there are plenty of stories, okay? So, Shem Yirachem Aleinu. So, in the 80s, the late 80s, early 90s, the Russians started coming out. And believe it or not, that Jew from Riga, in his old age, arrived in Israel, a Chabadnik, B'Lev V'Nefesh, and Alona Einstein, who now is a tzaddeket and had all her life was devoted to Gemilat Chesed. She set up charity funds for Kalat B'nei Brak. She went to see him, and she said, "It me gebench dasich so gedenken, dasich bin a Yiddish tach. Ich will euch sagen, ich bin heint a Yiddish tachter, wie ich darf sein. I am a Jewish daughter, like I should be." And it was a very moving moment in the history of Torah and the miracles that God has vouchsafed unto us during this wonderful period. So you see, he is right with it, Reb Menashe Klein. It's the nail on the head. He says, I can be a Baal Tshuva. If I do a sin and I do Tshuva, that's a Baal Tshuva. He can be. I can be. Yitzchak can be. Vic can be. Well, you talk about these kids who knew nothing. You talk about the Russians, total hefkera. How can you say Baal Tshuva? Avol, kilitem et hamakar. Kilitem et hashrashim. I used to use that very effectively in the army in my lectures. Not Baal Tshuva. People hear the word Baal Tshuva right away. They get frightened. No, no. Come back. Come home. This is what it's about. This is what being a Jew is about. And yet, you know, Re'u v'tamu ki tov. If a Jew experiences his Shabbat, let him read the interview with Ivanka Trump. If a Jew experiences Shabbat, they're not the same anymore. I told you with David Goldis. Remember I told you that he's an accountant, my Talmud, and he does a lot of work for Israelis in America. At times he comes to Israel. There's a lot of, he's in your field, Larry, David Goldis, Hollywood, Florida. So he had this guy he was doing accountancy work for, and he's in Las Vegas, and he has a business, and he was telling me stories about him. But a guy gomor, he got married on the beach to a Jewish, to a girl, maybe even an Israeli girl. But nishta a shtickel Yiddishkeit, no Yiddishkeit, nothing. He was giving staka, making millions, giving staka, and suddenly he had problems, and he goes to Los Angeles. New Los Angeles, you have Hancock Park, you have Fairfax, you have Beverly Hills, you have two tremendous areas filled with frum Jews, and in Hancock Park, Fairfax, Chiddush Yidden, and he experiences the Shabbat, and he's not the same anymore. And he's back in Israel. He's 100%. I couldn't believe it. I keep on asking David, where is he at today? 100%. He, his wife, from one Shabbat. But you can't say it's a Baal Teshuva, even though that's the word everyone will use. It's discovering his roots.
So he was Franz Rosenzweig.
Franz Rosenzweig.
Synagogue, I know Kippur, and the experience brought him back.
He was ready to convert, And one Yom Kippur brought him back, B'lei V'nefesh. He died young. He could have been, had a good cup. He could have been a big Talmud Chacham. The Rav quotes him. I quote the Rav quoting him in the Rav.
Where in the Rav does he say?
Look up the index. Look up Rosenzweig. I quote him with
it. Okay, yeah, I want to see
I unless my memory is off, but I believe the Rav quoted him. But he wasn't Bucking and Shas. And he had no background. And people say, had he lived...
Had a very deep
insight into what Torah is about, and the spirit, and the history. Okay, now, there's one more point in this tshuva. And here, it's very interesting. And the question came up, and evidently they were discussing this with Rabbi Ruderman, and you'll recognize this question. Do you put tefillin on a Jew who isn't totally from Hanocha tefillin? Ain't there still not Balei Tshuva? Is this a bizayon of tefillin? Okay? Now, you have to understand there's a background to this question. And while he doesn't mention the background, I will mention it and we'll end off with this. Watching the clock, wow. We'll daven Maariv. By the way, Larry, we daven Maariv here. Gentlemen, the Six-Day War put Chabad on the map. Until the Six-Day War, Chabad was a sect, a Hasidic sect that miraculously came back to life in Crown Heights. A little bit in Kfar Chabad, but it was not a major player. Six-Day War, you all know, had that three-week waiting period from the time NASA went into Sinai till the war broke out. The Israeli army was called up, the reserves, and you know, until today, I just had a grandson in, and another grandson shortly, and another grandson, besides the three grandsons I have in active service. Everyone else who finished already is called back in. So the reservists play a very big part of the army. And it's unbelievable, as I told you, the head of the reserves, the brigadier general in charge of this whole part of the army, is a future Hasidic Rebbe. His father is the Hasidic Rebbe in Gilo, and he will succeed his father. Eshtet Ibn Tata, he's with the father at all times, in the uniform of a brigadier general with his tzitzit out, the long beard payas, and his shtreimel and all that goes with it. So it's an amazing world today. So now, during this three-week period, you call up people. My grandson just came home from reserve duty. He was very happy. I said, why are you so happy? He said, they really utilized us. Every minute we were shooting, we were throwing grenades, we were fighting in mock villages. They really utilized us. We didn't waste time. And he said the food was terrific. And the chevra were terrific. Two-thirds of the whole unit of Tzanchanim were from, and the Skan Mefaked Gedud was with them the whole time. It's Rav David Staff's son is the head of this whole little unit. Rav Meir's nephew is a Tataluf. Of course, I write about it in Jewish Action. Menachem Kahana, Tataluf Menachem Kahana, Brigadier General. So you called up. You're bored. What are you doing? You're getting ready. Your gun is ready. Everything is ready. 3 weeks go by. So the Rebbe gave an order that the Chabadnikim should go out of Kfar Chabad and go to where the army, where they are in the Golan and in the in Sinai, and put tefillin on every Svaru, Kishem Hashem Nikra Alecha V'Yarum Mecha. The Goyim will be frightened by you if they see the tefillin. And the Chabadnikim did it. And then, when the war ended, you come to the Kotel, the big battle still being fought. what the kokel is, and it's the height of chutzpah to build a conservative temple in front of the kotel, where it's at the kotel hamaravi, the Beis HaMikdash, where the whole separation of sexes was finessed, and the machitza, the gemara in sukkah, dafnun, nunah, left the whole sukkah there. Nope. Who knows what the kotel would have become, an archaeological dig. Chabad opened up tefillin stands there. And those tefillin stands played a big role in turning the kotel into what it is today. Now, the Sakmaruv came out against Chabad. The first sefer written about the Six-Day War, published in 1967, Bruckman Tashkaz, was written by the Sakmaruv. It is called Kuntris Al Hagula the Al Hatmura. It's one of the Sfarim I know by heart. Michael, you can't be a good Zionist unless you know the Sakmaruv's writings. This sefer, and of course, Vayom Moshe. Go to page 104. Tremendous attack on the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He says that there are people in our generation who think they're doing a mitzvah by putting on tefillin on non-observant Israelis. They think they're doing a mitzvah, and it's the biggest sin in the world. Why? I'm quoting the Sakmaruv, because if I don't quote him, you won't believe these words. Aval elu harishoyim shekol machshival tam v'yiskom by a riot rachmona litzlam u'mizrahim betachlet nazuama v'chol megamotam l'man rabot zima u'lekein him tziyu giyus hanashim liot mufkarim k'gruim sheba umot asur lehem al pidin laniach tefillin. And the Sakmaruv writes that is people who are not religious, Stam Israelis, Moshe Dayan and his ilk, all that is on their mind is seducing and raping women. They are filled with the worst filth in the world. That's why they have women in the Israeli army, so they should be available to them at all times for illicit sexual behavior. And such people, asur lehem, it is forbidden to them al pidin to put on tefillin if this is what's on your mind. And therefore he says about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, these are very strong words, that the Satma Mavusa, it means the Satan, put this idea in his head that he thinks he's doing a mitzvah, and in reality he's adding sin and making this koach of the evil spirit of the Sitra Acher of the Satan all the stronger. And evidently, in conversation between Rav Menashe Klein and Rav Ruderman and Rav Neuberger, this question came up. What do we do with these people in Baltimore, came out of Russia, don't know anything, grubby young, not apikorsim, but totally ignorant of anything Jewish? Do we put tefillin on them? Is it a mitzvah or is it a bizayon for the tefillin? And with that, I'll leave you with the question until we meet again next week. Be'ezrat ha'natan li'ov kach. So what did we do? Basom mi'ketan haint, like the Rav would finish his shia. All right, we finished up comments, and I can't win with Shlomo Lakarbach. If I say he's good, I get smacked by those who say he's bad. If I say he's bad, I get smacked by those who say he's good. I stand on my psak halacha l'maisa. If the Jewish people sing Kalbach, we can sing Kalbach. Vayoma David El Gad, people sin. Hard for me to comprehend this. I saw Gedolei Yisrael up close. They didn't have to be Baal Tshuva because they never sinned. I have trouble. I daven in the Shtiblach a lot of times, Mincha, and they say now the long Mincha with the Al-Chayt, with the Yud Gimel Midot, so the Sfadim should feel at ease. I have to admit, I cannot say it. It's bad enough I have to say it Monday and Thursday. I don't know. I spend the whole day. I wake up early. I'm learning. I'm doing mitzvot. I'm answering questions. I can't say it. But in the shtiblach, yeah. You see, even the Ashkenazi, they call an Ashkenazi, Yud Gimel Midat. So, all right, you can't win. But that's what I say about Kalbach, and that's what I say, Meir Kahana, please, there might have been the concepts that we don't agree with, but the man did a lot. I've taught a lot of students who woke up to their roots because of Meir Kahana. I can give you names of students that I'm very close with until today, and Meir played a very big role in their life. Then we went on to Russian Jewry, we're just beginning, and Yomo and his friends. Do we have to be Chayshish? They're not Jewish. Avraham Rachman and his friends, we have to be Chayshish, Mamzerus, Geirut, Labriyut. Oh, what questions come up? And look at the way Rav Menashe Klein says, in my heart I have problems. I don't say it with my mouth, because he knows already the Sivya keeping it Munu Nitma'u. And the whole concept of Balei Tshuva, a misnomer. You can't use that word. It's discovering your roots. And we're left with the question, what about putting on tefillin, the machloikis, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the Sakhmer Ruv, ala gulav, ala tmura. Gentlemen, if it wouldn't be written, I wouldn't quote it. You follow me? It's hard to conceive, but this is what the Sakhmer Ruv said. And finally, I want to say once again, we say thank you to Moshe Burasut, and you won't believe what a small world it is when Sherry Levy is speaking with people about what this man has done and the 55,000 volumes available. Sherry says, oh, Borisut, it's my neighbor. His sister is a friend of Sherry Levy, married, living in Israel at Admat HaKodesh. So it's a very, very small world. Now, some of the freebies. This I have to tell you, Vic gave to me, it's by its your relative, right? Avi Berkowitz, how do you read? Right. And it's a genius, an American model of nationhood. He develops the idea that we should have states here and the autonomy. It's Begin's original plan. It's the state of Israel, but we have various municipalities. And there you have autonomy, and he compares it to the federal states in America. Very interesting article. Here's an interview with Rebbetzin Tehila Abramoff. This is a lady from South Africa, comes in Aliyah, devotes her life to Taret Mishpacha. It's a review of her new book on the topic. Very nice article. Here's the article I refer to, Ivanka Trump and Shabbat. Pure family time. Kol HaKavod La. Here's an article from Pamphlet Magazine on the Jews surrounding Trump. And we have a miracle. Trump's Jews, they are Jews. This is not the Jews surrounding Obama, who were leftist to the nth degree. And here's an amazing article on Trump and the donations he made to the evacuation of the settlers from Gush Katif with his name on a plaque. It's not put on now. It is real. And Kol HaKavod. This is an article on Trump's failed business ventures with Israel. Very interesting what he tried to do, and with the bureaucracy, nothing worked out. And here's an article from the New York Times on he wants security clearance for family. Can you give security clearance to family? And the answer is yes, that there are precedents for it, and he can get security clearance for those that are closest to him and advise him. Tomorrow morning, it's one of a kind. I'm pausing. We finished the Rebbe. We're going to go on to Rav Yitzchak Kutna, but I want to devote time to an interesting chapter that was released by Rabbi Haskell Lukstein. And I want to tell you what really happened in YU in 41, 42, 43. And get it out of my system and let the bells of history ring out. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Can we have a chazan? This bring over Siddurim.